Hello, I'm Mariëtte Snyman, a journalist devoted to uncovering new ways of living a happier and healthier life. Welcome to Calm, Clear and Helpful, my weekly podcast series on taking good care of yourself and others. In this series, I introduce you to wellness professionals ready to assist and inspire. Today, our topic is how fasting can benefit your body and mind. I trust that any questions you may have about issues like the different types of fasting, when fasting is a good idea, and its connection to emotional eating will be answered in this episode. My guest is Marielle Wolmerans, functional medicine health coach, nutrigenomics practitioner, NLP life coach, and Bredesen protocol coach from Pretoria East. Welcome back on the show, Marielle.
Hi, Mariëtte. It's lovely to be back. Thank you.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. During our conversation, Marielle will give us tips on daily habits that can support fasting, and then it will be fun question time. Marielle, for those listeners who haven't heard our episode on how to detox the functional medicine way, please tell us more about your work.
Okay. Yes, I'll elaborate a bit more. My journey started in healthcare. I worked in healthcare for 20 years. And then I struggled with severe burnout. It eventually led to insomnia and depression for many years, and I couldn't find the help I needed from conventional doctors. So I decided to retrain as a functional medicine health coach to be able to help myself. I realized that trauma healing, nutritional deficiencies, and stress management were lifestyle changes that I had to make in order to find my balance again. As an empath, I have a deep understanding of how emotional difficulties affect physical health. With my clients, I work with energy healing. I use functional testing like DNA and gut health testing. I focus on physical and emotional detoxification, and I bring in CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy, to look at overall holistic health. I offer other services, including quantum biofeedback and ozone therapy, which also helps.
Yeah, that really is a very integrated approach. Now we're coming to our topic. It seems that fasting is becoming a lifestyle choice for many people. How would you define fasting?
So in a lifestyle and wellness sense, fasting can be defined as a mindful lifestyle practice where a person intentionally takes a break from eating and sometimes drinking for a set period of time, just to give the body a rest, support natural detoxification, and also to promote overall balance in health and well-being. So in the process, we create a space for the body to repair and rest, and we also improve awareness of eating habits and relationship with food. And it supports our wellness goals like energy, clarity, and balance. So it's less of a diet and more of a rhythm of living that supports both body and mind.
Marielle, what are the different types of fasting?
That's a great question. Fasting has many forms, and people often adapt it depending on their lifestyle or health goals. Here's a few examples, and the most common one, which most of us know about, is intermittent fasting. So this is where we alternate between periods of eating and not eating within a 24-hour cycle. It can be done different ways. The most effective way is called 16-8. We do 16 hours of fasting and 8 hours of eating. We always start with the easier ones, which is 14-10 or 12-12, where you eat for 12 hours and you fast for 12 hours. Some people only do one meal a day, where all the calories is in one sitting. And we also do it in a 5-2 way. So 5 days of the week, you eat normal, which includes healthy food, low-calorie, high-protein foods. And on 2 days, you fast. And the aim here is to support your weight balance, digestion, to give you energy, and also to improve metabolic health. We also get time-restricted eating, so you only eat between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. and you fast overnight. This one helps to improve sleep and your hormone balance and gut health. Some people prefer alternative day fasting. So they eat one day and the next day they fast. And we're looking at around 500 calories that they eat maximum. This is also for weight management and metabolic flexibility. And then we get periodic or prolonged fasting. So some people have a lot of endurance, so they can fast for longer than 24 hours, up to 72 hours or several days very often. And it is to give the digestive system a complete rest. And we create autophagy. And autophagy is complete cellular cleanup. And people also do it for spiritual reasons, just to reset. This one is best done with guidance, as it's very intense. Water fasting. Lots of people have heard about water fasting. It can also be between 24 to 72 hours. This creates a deep detox and cellular renewal. We get also juice or smoothie fastings or juice cleanse that can go up to 3 days. You don't eat solid food, and it's just a gentle digestive reset while you're still getting your nutrients. Because if you do the water fast, people very often get headaches, they get really hungry, and you still need the nutrients. And then we obviously get selective fasting where people just want to cut out sugar or caffeine or alcohol for a period of time. And then the last one is religious fasting. People do it for Lent or Ramadan for different spiritual reasons.
Thank you. I never knew there were so many different forms.
Yes.
Could you tell us what the benefits of fasting are?
So we use this a lot in functional medicine. Because it goes about cellular repair, metabolic balance, and resetting all the underlying systems. As I was saying about autophagy, fasting triggers autophagy. It's the body's process of cleaning out damaged cells and regenerating new ones. This really helps with inflammation, oxidative stress, and it decreases your risk of chronic diseases. Another main one, what it helps for is it improves insulin sensitivity and metabolic health. So this is relevant for people with pre-diabetes, metabolic syndrome, and type 2 diabetes. It's really good to balance the hormones like insulin, cortisol, growth hormone, but even sex hormones. And it supports women with PCOS, and men with low testosterone also find a lot of benefit from this one. As we said earlier, it reduces inflammation, which in return, people have reported improved gut health, clearer skin, and less joint pain. It also gives the gut a rest, and it increases the microbiome diversity, which is also always what we are aiming for, to keep the gut as healthy as possible and to improve the gut's barrier, the lining, and to keep the integrity. It's very good for the brain. It promotes ketone production, which is fuel for the brain, which is better fuel than glucose. It supports memory, increases focus. They are studying this at the moment for ADHD. And it's also used in cognitive decline, like for Alzheimer's. And it also helps for mood regulation. And then it supports detox, detoxification, which helps with healthy aging. And it helps with weight balancing because it helps regulate hunger hormones like ghrelin and leptin. So it's easier to maintain a healthy body weight. So it's a therapeutic tool in functional medicine, which we use a lot.
You had a fascinating post on Facebook about brain scans showing that intermittent fasting can literally rewire the brain. Could you please tell us what the post revealed?
Yes, that's beautifully put. You're describing one of the most exciting areas of research in functional medicine, which is the gut-brain axis and how fasting directly influences it. There was recent research in different publications to say that it actually changes both the brain and the gut. So that's very exciting. And the brain scans showed shifts in a part of the brain called the frontal orbital gyrus. And that area is involved in appetite, impulse control, and addictive behaviors. So these changes help the brain to regulate eating more efficiently. And it also showed that the gut bacteria was increased, the right gut bacteria, and it produced metabolites that support healthy brain function. So it highlights the two-way communication between the gut and the brain, and lots of research is coming out about it. And yeah, that's really interesting. So by changing the gut environment through fasting, the beneficial bacteria flourish and they become more, and they release compounds that modulate brain activity, improving your decision-making around food and reducing cravings. So that's very exciting.
Another question I have relates to emotional eating. How would you describe emotional eating, and how does it relate to fasting?
That's a very good question. Emotional eating is something that many people struggle with because it connects directly to fasting in different ways. But it's basically if people use food to feed feelings instead of hunger. It's a way to distract and soothe and cope with feelings of stress or boredom or loneliness. Fasting can really help by resetting the appetite signals. It creates mindfulness around cravings and supporting brain pathways that regulate the emotions, as we just described above. So how we know that people emotionally eat. So people talk about comfort foods. Certain people crave salty foods, high fat, sugary foods, which are all not great. They eat when they're bored, when they're not really hungry. They eat too big portions, especially when they're stressed. And then they feel guilty or shame afterwards. So it's a cycle that fasting really helps for.
If there are so many different types of fasting, Marielle, how does one know which form of fasting is the best for one's body?
Yeah, that's what we especially look at in functional medicine. Not one size fits all, but personalized to the body's needs. So we look at the following things when we decide which fast is best for you. And it can be a combination. Not everyone does one specific form of fasting. So we first look at metabolic health. This is what we want to correct. Does a person have insulin resistance, pre-diabetes, or just struggling with weight? Then we look at intermittent fasting, which is 16-8. That's what we are striving for. But people usually start with 14-10. So you fast for 14 hours and you have a eating period of 10 hours. It's a safe starting point. When we do 16-8, that is when autophagy kicks in. So we always aim for that one. When people have adrenal fatigue or high stress, prolonged fasting may backfire. It's not always the best because it creates too much cortisol. So a gentle 12-hour eating, 12-hour resting is better. It also affects women differently than men. Women's hormones are affected very often if you fast too much or too long. So we fast according to our cycles. Does a person have gut issues like IBS, bloating, reflux? Then we would look at doing a short overnight fast, 12 to 14 hours, and it can help the gut rest without stressing the body, because stress, again, causes bloating. It's like a vicious cycle. Looking at your lifestyle, it obviously has to be convenient for your lifestyle. If you're somebody who's busy in the mornings, then skipping breakfast may be ideal. And then you can easily do a 16-hour fast. Is family dinners important? Then you can eat early, like 6 p.m. in the evening, and that might really work for you. Or if you're athletic and you have an active lifestyle, you might need to modify fasting a bit. You might have to eat protein during your fast or just have shorter fasting windows. The most important thing is to listen to your body. Your body tells you what it needs. So do I feel energized when I'm fasting, or do I feel weak and shaky? Am I more clear-headed, or am I irritable and foggy? And does it improve my sleep and digestion, or does it disrupt them? So it should feel supportive, not punishing. You're not punishing yourself. You're just trying to help yourself. So the key is always to start gentle. Just start with a 12-12 and see if your body can do that, and then you increase it. And you can also do occasional prolonged fast between 24 and 36 hours. The research suggests if you can do that once a month, it's amazing for your body and resetting everything, but only if your health and your stress levels allows it. And if you have issues like thyroid issues, hormonal imbalances, low body weight, eating disorders, or chronic fatigue, seek guidance. Don't just go into it and put that extra stress onto your body. You can still fast, but gentler ways is needed. And get the support of somebody like a coach to guide you through this. So it's all about your goals and what's good for your body. So listen to your body signals, what fits with your lifestyle, and what are your health goals?
I find this very practical, everything you've mentioned. I was wondering, the occasional fasting, would that then be a water fast, or what would that be?
So I prefer a juice fast because you still get your nutrients. I find a water fast sometimes too hard, but if you can do it, definitely very good. It clears the gut completely. And sometimes we get days where we're not hungry, and then it's easy just to say, okay, today I'm just drinking water. So yeah, definitely.
And perhaps I may ask you here, I know that when one does something like a juice fast and you're used to having a lot of coffee, for instance, then you might get symptoms, withdrawal symptoms from dropping the coffee. What would you suggest in that case?
Yes. So when I do a fast, I do it gently, and I do a few days preparation. I advise my clients to do that. So slowly reduce coffee before you start a fast, if possible. Drink, hydrate more, add electrolytes to your water. Also make sure you sleep enough, your stress levels, all those things affect how you're feeling when you fast. But the preparation is really important.
Thank you. With which forms of fasting do you assist your clients?
So I do between 4 and 5 day fast with my clients, depending on different factors. But I start with a juice fast for 1 day, and then I do a 12-12 fast the next day. I also incorporate a day with water fasting, and then I build it up to 16-8 fast if possible, if the client can do that. But yeah, I adjust it to each client and their lifestyle.
Yeah, that is the advantage of having a coach, isn't it? That they can personalize your what's good for you.
Yes, and I also, it encourages, I always do the fast with clients if possible, so it helps me as well.
Oh, lucky clients.
Yeah.
Marielle, I wanted to ask you about the keto or ketogenic diet. What does it entail and how does it work?
Yes, the keto diet is a great topic. It's one of the most researched nutritional approaches, especially for metabolism and brain health and inflammation, which are hot topics at the moment. So we're looking at very low carb, carbohydrate, high fat, moderate protein diet. And the aim is to shift the body from burning glucose to burning fat. So the typical macronutrient breakdown, we're looking at 70 to 75% fat. And when I talk about fat, it's good fats, avocado, olive oil, coconut, seeds, butter, and fatty fish. 20 to 25% should be protein. This should be high quality protein, like organic meat, eggs, poultry, fish, and plant proteins if you are vegan. And only 5 to 10% of carbs, which are mostly leafy greens and non-starchy vegetables and some berries. So it limits you to 20 to 25 grams per day of carbs. So you don't exclude it completely, but you eat better quality carbs. So the carbs are restricted when your blood sugar and your insulin drop. This reduces the body's dependence on glucose. And the liver produces the ketones from stored fat, and they become the body's new fuel. And a metabolic shift happens, and that's called ketosis. And this is a state where fat and ketones, not glucose, provide your energy. There's lots of benefits to this. The first one is metabolic health, which improves insulin sensitivity. We have a big problem of diabetes, so this really helps for that, and it helps to control your blood sugar and obviously help you with weight management. It's very good for our brains. Ketones are clean, efficient fuel. So it improves your focus and memory, and it also protects against neurodegeneration or Alzheimer's disease. It reduces inflammation. Inflammation is a hot topic. It creates chronic diseases. So we want to create fewer blood sugar spikes, and that causes less oxidative stress. It balances our hormones. As we talked earlier about PCOS, it regulates our energy, which is also good to sustain you during the day. And you don't really get hungry or cravings. So it completely stabilizes your appetite. So yeah, it's very helpful for people with pre-diabetes, type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome. People want to lose weight, and neurological conditions like epilepsy. There's lots of research happening in ADHD at the moment, and it's also for cognitive decline. So this is the only diet that is prescribed for the Bredesen protocol that I used in my coaching for the prevention and reversal of Alzheimer's. So it's really good for the brain, and it also lowers inflammation. There's a few people who it's not so great for. So you have to be careful when you have thyroid imbalances, adrenal fatigue, and certain gut issues and eating disorders. It can cause keto flu. They call it keto flu. So you get fatigue, headaches, irritability, as you described earlier, when your body adapts. So always aim for clean keto, good, healthy fats, not processed meats or artificial sweeteners, because then you get a completely different effect. Yeah, so in summary, it trains your body to run on fat and ketones instead of sugar.
Marielle, what are the challenges related to the keto diet?
Yeah, there's many benefits, but there is also challenges and considerations that you need to be aware of. As we talked about the keto flu, it's an adaptation phase. So when you're switching from glucose to fat for fuel, some people feel fatigued, headaches, dizziness, irritable, and some even have brain fog. That usually lasts a few days to a week as your body adapts, and we can minimize it with hydration, electrolytes, and just gradual carb reduction. Don't cut it out completely straight away. Some get nutrient deficiencies because now we're limiting fruits, whole grains, and vegetables, and it causes fiber, vitamin, and mineral deficiencies. So how we can fix this is to eat low-carb vegetables and things like nuts and seeds and fermented foods, and consider supplements if you need to. Some people get digestive issues. They get constipated because now we don't have enough fiber, or people get diarrhea or bloating because now you eat high-fat dairy or MCT oils. It's a bit of adjusting. It's difficult to attend social gatherings. It takes a bit of planning and preparation because now you have to eat high fat and low carb meals. And hormonal risks come through as well. So the thyroid issues, if you have adrenal fatigue or low body weight, it can be aggravated. Women have to be more careful. It's different for women, and people with liver or kidney or pancreas conditions need medical supervision. You need to find out if this is sustainable for you as a person that fits in with your lifestyle. If it's too hard, then you won't be able to maintain it for long term. So you can consider doing it cyclical or just targeted, allowing some carb refeed days where you do eat carbs again, just to keep you motivated. And some people overemphasize dirty keto. So you eat processed meats, cheeses, artificial sweeteners, and that again can create inflammation or nutrient gaps. So it's a powerful diet, but it requires planning and monitoring and also personalizing it to your own lifestyle. And it's important to focus on whole foods and listening to your body.
Thank you. You've mentioned brain health and dementia. And those topics one often comes across, especially Alzheimer's. How would you describe the link between brain health and diet?
So diet plays a central role in brain health and in the risk for neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's. Because the brain requires energy and nutrients. It's metabolically active. So about 20% of our daily calories is used by the brain. It depends on glucose, healthy fats, and micronutrients like B vitamins, zinc, magnesium, omega-3s for energy, neurotransmitter production, and cellular repair. Then we're also looking at inflammation and oxidative stress. So our diets that is high in processed food, sugar, and trans fats increase inflammation and oxidative stress. And chronic inflammation damages neurons and blood vessels, and that contributes to cognitive decline and Alzheimer's. And the brain needs insulin to regulate energy and memory formation. High sugar or poor quality carb diets cause insulin resistance. Sometimes this is called type 3 diabetes, and that is linked to Alzheimer's. And then the gut-brain axis plays a major role because the gut microbiome communicates with the brain via the vagus nerve, hormones, and metabolites. So diets rich in fiber, fermented foods, and polyphenols support a healthy microbiome, and that in turn supports mood, cognition, and neuroprotection. And then neuroprotective nutrients are the following: healthy fats, always good quality omega-3s, not omega-6s. And we get these from fish, nuts, and seeds. They support neuron structure and function. Antioxidants, which we get from nice, colorful vegetables like berries and herbs. So they say we have to eat 1.5 cups of blueberries a day. Sure. That fights free radicals. Yeah, so that's something nice to eat, which has color in it. And then different herbs help as well. And then Mediterranean diet and keto diet definitely lower the risk of cognitive decline, showing all our new research. And then we talked about ketones. They fuel the brain, and it helps to decrease inflammation because we're using ketones and not glucose. It potentially protects neurons and improves focus and memory. In summary, what you eat directly affects brain structure, function, and resilience. So we need to look at diets high in nutrients and eating anti-inflammatory foods and exclude high processed foods and sugar and unhealthy fats.
I know you have trained as a Bredesen protocol coach. What does this mean?
Yeah, so it's a protocol by a doctor in America, Dr. Bredesen. And as a coach, I help people to protect their memory, restore clarity, and boost brain health through simple, sustainable lifestyle shifts. So the protocol helps to reverse and also prevent cognitive decline. It's by Dr. Dale Bredesen, and we're looking at different factors, including nutrition, exercise, sleep, stress management. Hormonal balance is very important, gut and immune health, and then cognitive stimulation. So one of the worst things that promote Alzheimer's is loneliness. And with our lifestyle these days, people are more lonely, research is showing, and also we are more on our phones, so our brains don't get the exercises they used to, and that all promotes neuroplasticity. As a coach, we serve as a motivational partner, providing guidance, accountability, and education. We also help with tracking progress. You have to do a few lab results, which we help with. We help with cognitive assessments and adherence to lifestyle interventions. And it's obviously personalized to each client to find the root cause of the cognitive decline. So many people struggle to implement multiple lifestyle changes, and that's where a coach comes in and gives support. And we also bridge the gap between medical advice from all the tests that were done and to help to implement it into day-to-day behavior and make the protocol more accessible and effective. We also involve the patient's family, if the client's family, if possible, who also can help to implement lifestyle changes and with mental stimulation.
A quick note on what I do. I'm a content entrepreneur creating podcasts and articles on living a happier and healthier life by interviewing coaches, therapists, and other wellness experts from over the world. You'll find this content on my website, marietsneeman.co.za, and it's there to help you find just the right helping professional when you need one. The section Up Close and Personal on my website offers you a glimpse of the person behind many of the experts I feature. If you're a wellness expert keen on getting more in-person or online clients or creating worldwide awareness of an issue close to your heart, let's talk about co-creating a podcast or article, or perhaps featuring you in a South African magazine. You'll find more information under services on my website. Now, back to my guest. Would individuals come to you who have someone in the family with cognitive impairment, or individuals who perhaps are worried about their cognition? Who would come to you for this?
So it can be either. It's usually the family or a friend that comes first, because a lot of people don't like to admit that they're starting to forget things and they don't always notice it. When they leave their car keys in the fridge and they look for it for a few hours, they don't like to tell someone about it because they feel a bit embarrassed. So it's very often the family that comes to us first. But yeah, anyone can ask for help.
That's very encouraging to know that you can go to someone who can work out a holistic plan to help you with this challenge.
And people don't always believe that there's a lot of power in your own hands. There's a lot of changes you can make. And if you address it in time, Alzheimer's is 100% reversible. And the new research is very promising, but it takes dedication from the client side.
Marielle, developing a new lifestyle, especially regarding eating habits, can be very challenging. What can help to motivate individuals who want to include fasting in their lifestyle?
Yeah, any lifestyle changes can be quite hard, and it's long-standing habits that we're trying to change. So motivation is definitely key, and looking at behavioral perspective can help. So as a coach, we always start with clear goals. You need to decide, why do you want to fast? Is this to lose weight? You want to improve your energy, mental clarity, gut health? Set specific, realistic goals. So you can say, for instance, I want to try 12-12 fasting for 3 days a week, rather than saying, let's start 5 days a week with a 16-8 fast. So be realistic. Make sure you do your own research about the benefits. What is the science behind fasting? If you know that it can help to improve insulin sensitivity or your gut or your brain function, that really helps with reinforcing commitment. Get visual reminders or journal so you can keep track of your progress. That's very motivating. Start slow and secure. Give yourself 12-hour fasting windows in the beginning. And for women especially, it helps to the fasting cycles changes throughout their cycle. So get as much information about what your body would need. That will help. You get tracking apps that track your energy levels, your mood, sleep, weight changes, and see any improvements, even small ones. Compliment yourself and reinforce your positive behavior. and then combine it with different new things, which can be exciting, like herbal teas, meditate, or just light movement. So bring in new habits that will keep it interesting. And it will help you to feel purposeful. And support system is always good. So I do these fasts with a group. Accountability partners really helps, a friend or somebody in the family that also wants to lose weight or improve their diabetes. And then you can share like that. And then make sure you stay positive, focus on your mindset, not only on restriction. So keep track of your small goals and try and see how it empowers your body. Try and focus on the empowering part and not like this is a punishment. And then personalize it to your own life. As we said, don't try and do eat breakfast if that's not what you usually do. If you don't eat breakfast, then just fall in with it and flow with it. Whatever's doable for your own lifestyle. Yeah, education and clarity is important. Tracking your progress and keeping yourself motivated with positivity really helps.
Along similar lines, do you have any tips on healthy habits that can support fasting?
Yes, the right daily habits make it definitely easier to sustain it and to improve your results. So when I do these supported fasts with my clients, I have a daily fasting support checklist, which I give to them, and they can tick off everything as they go along. And also I do a WhatsApp group, which helps with the support. But things I look at during the fast to help you sustain it is hydration, first of all. It helps to reduce your hunger, and it helps with detoxing, and it keeps the energy levels stable. If you can add a bit of salt, electrolytes really helps with that dip in energy that you get in the afternoon. Herbal teas are really great. You can drink black coffee or sparkling water, which some people find nicer, but always make sure it's filtered water. When you do eat, don't eat everything that you're not supposed to eat. Mm-hmm. So keep your meals balanced. Now, so don't go for a fast food meal, but stick to healthy fats, high quality protein, and fiber-rich vegetables. Keep you full for longer. And sleep, we all know if you don't sleep enough, then you feel irritable. You're not able to endure so much. You feel more stressed when eating differently. So aim for 7 to 9 hours of quality sleep, high quality sleep. Stress management, high stress can trigger emotional eating. So use meditation, deep breathing, light movement, and journaling. That can really help. Keep active, even if it's just gentle exercising like walking, stretching, or yoga. High-intensity workouts are usually better during your eating window or after adequate adaptation. So then your body is less stressed. And when you do eat, focus on chewing your food more. Eat slowly without distractions and enjoy your food. It is there to enjoy. And plan your fasting windows to train your body and your brain. Align it with your circadian rhythm that supports digestion and metabolism. And also don't fast if you have a day, lots of meetings, it's a stressful day, but it's Wednesday and I have to fast. Rather postpone it to another day when you're less stressed and more focused on fasting. There is some supplements you can take to support. As I was talking about electrolytes, they've shown a really, really important, especially if we drink filtered water. Very often it doesn't contain any minerals. And we need minerals to prevent fatigue and headaches, especially when you do longer fasts, because you usually get those minerals out of your food, which you're not getting now. Omega-3s, vitamin D and Bs, helpful, supporting your brain, gives us energy, and it helps maintain metabolic function. And keep tracking those apps or journaling, and as we said, get a supportive partner, just accountability, use your coach, but yeah, support is always important. Yeah, so daily routines that support your body rhythm make fasting feel more natural, sustainable, and effective.
Thank you, Marielle. Where can listeners learn more about your work or follow you?
I am on social media, on Instagram and Facebook, under my name Marielle Vormerans and Beautiful Health. And my website is beautifulhealth.co.za. All my services is listed there.
Thank you. I'll attach the link to your website to the podcast, and the rest of the information will be in the podcast notes.
Thank you.
May I ask you a fun question?
Yes, definitely.
If you could lie down in a field of flowers, which flowers or herbs would you prefer?
Definitely yellow tulips.
Oh, sure. That was quick.
I had some similar picture in my mind earlier this week about yellow tulips. I just love them at the moment. Mm-hmm.
Do they have a fragrance?
They do, yeah, a little bit.
Thank you, Marielle, for shedding such a lot of light on fasting. I learned a lot from you, and I really appreciate the thorough research you always do for our podcasts. Thank you.
No problem. It was a lot of information, a lot to process. I hope listeners would go back and listen to it over and over, but they're welcome to contact me if they need any more information.
Thank you. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. I'd be honored if you'd subscribe to this podcast series and rate it where you download your podcasts. And if you found this episode helpful, please share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, marietsneeman.co.za, for this episode's podcast notes and for free podcasts and articles on how to live a happier and healthier life and have more fulfilling relationships. To follow me on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn, just search for Mariette Sneeman Journalist. The podcast series, Calm, Clear and Helpful, is produced by me with original music by Mart Marie Sneeman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9.